Welcome to the Two Mutts Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Marshall. Welcome back to the Two Mutts Podcast, presented by Manscaped. I'm your host, Joshua Marshall. I'm with Trevor Ruptash. Rupper, how's it going?
It's going good, buddy. You?
Good, good. Can't complain. We got Clay Vanderham. Vandy, how's it going?
Vandy is dandy. The grind of evals are done for us, and I think we're heading into a season within the next week or so. So
perfect.
Things are looking good.
Yeah, that's good. And last but not least, we got the closer, Brody McIntyre. Brodes, how's it going?
Buddy, I've had a good couple days here, so I'm in a good mood. Had a good solid day today, so I'm looking forward to tonight.
Yeah, no, exactly. We had a good interview tonight. You and I got to take part in it. The other guys were tied up and had other commitments. But yeah, we had two great guests on, Anthony Stewart and Lolly Tour. So Anthony Stewart with his Stewart Hockey and Hockey Equality, and Lolly Tour from Appanah Hockey. So this is a great conversation. I thought we, we do quite a few of these, and we haven't done one in a little bit because we took a month off. But Brode's thoughts before we jump into things, thoughts on the interview today, give a little tease going into it.
You know what? He is a great man, and he is doing some wonderful things for the grassroots of hockey, for inclusion, diversity, getting it going. And he's got lots of really good hockey players coming up through his program and more to come. And he said he's going to be branching out. So it was really, really good. I enjoyed every second of it.
Yeah, I know it was really good. So I'm sure everyone will enjoy it. That we'll get to that interview very shortly here. But before we get to it, we have a few things to get to, a few NHL news and notes before we jump into everything. But we're happy to bring back Manscaped to the 2 Mutts Podcast. Use promo code 2 Mutts at checkout. You get 20% off. Your balls will thank you. So great to have those guys back on. And that classic Rupper ad reads are going to be back in the mix. So we're looking forward to that, So Rupper gets very creative here. Now he's back with us. He took a few months off, so he's back in the mix. But I guess training camp started, boys. We're in Edmonton, neck of the woods. We'll jump there. We'll start there. Start with some good news. There's a bit of a polarizing thing, but how things have gone as of late over Twitter and Instagram and all these other articles. But line combinations so far have been pretty interesting to see. But Rupper, what's your thoughts with Zach Hyman, with McDavid and Puljujärvi?
I like it. Like I said before, Hyman for me is a guy that I think is going to relish in that role. I think he's a room guy. I think he's a glue guy. I think he's the guy McDavid maybe has been waiting for. I guess we'll see, right? I mean, how long has McDavid been here now? 6 years or five or seven or whatever it is. And, we really haven't found anybody to play with him but Leon, to be quite honest with you. And, I'm not a NHL coach. I just think those two, I'm not saying let's never play those guys together. I just think it's harder to coach against when they're split up, right?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it's hard to coach when they're together, but it's just a one-trick pony at that point, right? So, Puljujärvi, I don't know. Jury's still out for me on him. I don't think he's a first-line player. I don't think he's a second-line player. He didn't play much in the playoffs last year. Why? Right? Yeah, did he have an okay regular season? Yeah, what did he get? 12, 13 goals, 14?
Yeah,
somewhere around there. Yeah. But
yep.
When it came down to it, it was the same Puljujärvi, looked disinterested in the playoffs, wouldn't go into tough spaces. And that's just, a washed up, college hockey player.
Yeah.
Giving you his opinion, whether you run with that or not, it's up to you.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I think the line combinations have been pretty good so far. You know, it's always good. I guess, you know, Broads, you know, we get to see Nuge back with Draisaitl and Yamamoto. Yamamoto signs, gets the 1 year deal. As you talked about, that wasn't much to worry about. It was going to get done at some point, got done before camp. But thoughts on that line, you know, going into the season?
I like the line. I love the Nuge. Love Draisaitl, but I do like the way Yamamoto plays. I like the way he's hunting pucks, but he's, like Rupper was saying, with Puljujärvi not being a top six forward. What's Yamamoto done to say he's a top six forward?
Yeah.
Nothing, right? He had 2 goals in the last, I don't know what it was, 20-something games or something.
Yeah, I
think playing it was like actually, yeah, elite. Four. Pardon me?
Yeah, I think it was like 4 goals in his last, last 40, was it? Four goals in his last, I think, 30-some games, right? You know, he kind of just cooled off. He had a good
start. Playing with one of the best players in the world, right? One of the best players in the entire world he was with.
Yeah.
And couldn't get it done. So I don't know. I like Nugent Draisaitl together. I don't know where that line works together. I guess it doesn't really matter if you have those two on the one line. But I don't know. It's a really good line, but I don't think Yamamoto is doing much to create success for the line. I think he just happens to be on that line.
Yeah. And Vandy, you know, you're a defenseman. You play that role pretty well, you know, in your time in playing hockey. But, you know, thoughts on Slater Cuckoo and Evan Bouchard coming out today saying, you know, all practice, we want to play against McDavid in practice. And they, from all accounts, they play pretty good against them. You know, it's one game, it's day one on ice training camp. But thoughts on that pairing going forward, if it could be a pretty reliable pairing for the Oilers?
Well, first off, I played 1 year ball hockey defense. Normally I was a cherry picker up at the red line, but why wouldn't you? If I'm a defenseman in the NHL, I want to go against the best, and you have those players on your team. Yeah. You want to practice because you know that Draisaitl and McDavid are going 110 every practice. So it's going to make you better. Right. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I like that. I mean, I like how everything's shaping up. I haven't been following it as much as I have in the past. Just, you know, like everybody, we're busy. We're trying to kind of keep our heads above water here and just kind of go with the flow and make sure the kids keep playing and all that stuff. But I think, you know, as far as the lines, my guess is with Draisaitl, and it's a comfort thing. You know, they want to see what Hyman does with McDavid and Puljujärvi. And I disagree with Rupp. I think Puljujärvi, yeah, you know, did he disappear near the end of the year? Yeah. But I think he took a big leap last year in the regular season. He wasn't the only one that kind of went AWOL in the playoffs. So I think they learned a lesson last year. I think we'll see a different crew this year.
Yeah, and I don't mind that third line with Warren Fogle, Derek Ryan, and Zach Cassian. So that line's going to be
got some size, there. Boys?
Yeah, like, obviously Derek Ryan's a bit smaller, but you got two big guys on the wing, and Derek Ryan usually often starts to play with the puck. So I think that will be a pretty good line to look forward to this year. So I like that a lot. The unfortunate news, you know, it is what it is, and this is the world we're living in right now, but Duncan Keith will miss the first 5 preseason games and miss about a week or so into training camp, and he's got his own issues for that, and that was because he got the vaccine here, and from what I've been told, he took the Johnson & Johnson shot, took the one-shot vaccine, and now he has to quarantine for the 14 days, that's what I was told, so... That's why that situation happened. It was a late decision, but you know, Rupper, thoughts on him missing the first week of training camp and the first 5 preseason games going into you know, a new tenure with a new organization.
Not much to say. That was his choice. That's what he wanted to do. Unfortunately, the rules are the rules. Whether I agree with them or not, that's another podcast, really.
Yeah.
You know, you got 100,000 plus people watching games down in the States. And, you know, this guy can't play with his team. It's like I said, I don't want to get into that side of stuff. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a, dermatologist or whatever these people are.
It would not be a dermatologist.
That's how much I know about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Dr. Rupper.
Is that what it is? Dermatologist? I don't even know. I don't even know the word. I don't even care. Oh, let him play, for God's sake. You know, just let him play. Fuck, these guys are going through enough.
Listen, like, yeah.
They got to be, they got to get tested every day. They gotta go through security every day. I mean, for God's sakes, they just did this. They weren't vaccinated last year, and they let them play. So what's the difference?
Well,
Jesus, there
is
Christ.
It is a talking point, more or less. I guess I didn't maybe word that question right. I was more trying to get, you know, him not being there for the first 5 days. You know,
I know.
Let's stay on that track.
Yeah, like that, it is what it is. With, like, obviously the COVID thing is the COVID thing, and if people want to get information, they can go find the information. I'm not saying we're going to be a COVID podcast and anti-vaccine and pro whatever.
Apparently, we're skin cancer.
Yeah, I don't even know. Aloe Vera is our new sponsor.
Yeah. But obviously it's a talking point because they do have an Oiler that isn't vaccinated, and he is, you know, a pretty key player to the team, a good top nine forward, and that's Josh Archibald. Ken Holland had the press conference, didn't name Archibald until later in the day when he did an interview with Bob Stauffer on Oilers Now. You know, Vandy, your thoughts on that? You know, it is his decision. I know, you know, even Connor Hellebuck today with the Winnipeg Jets, they did their first media avail today, and he talked about how he had COVID, then got forced into taking the vaccine. So he had a rough bout with COVID. Then he took the vaccine, had a rough bout with that, and it just was all into one. He wished he had some time to take the vaccine later on, but that wasn't the case. And he talked about openly how that was frustrating for him, and he wished he had more time. But, you know, and you're seeing it, the Zach Rinaldos, the Brody Wilds, they're not invited to the training camps. They're here you go. You guys are either going to the American Hockey League or
disappoints me, I guess a disappointment, and is how easily we're throwing these unvaccinated players, just names out there. And, you know, I think it was
Tyler Pertuzzi too in Detroit.
But
right?
But I mean, they've obviously, these players have come out publicly and said, I didn't get it. But I mean, it's almost like they're being shamed by their own team.
100%. They don't even show. If this guy had a knee injury, they wouldn't even tell
yeah,
you
they'd say
what
it's
the
an
knee injury was. Yeah. It's an upper body injury, a lower body injury, and here
and
we
that,
are.
That's what
it's
concerns
back
me
to
and what yeah, upsets 100%. Me about this whole thing is just we're you know, the and I get it, social media, we're not as private as we, but shit like that needs to be kept private and kept behind closed doors.
And I'll give credit where credit's due. You know, I'm pretty biased to this one, but the guy that the GM down the road, Brad Treliving, Calgary Flames general manager, they have a player that's in this situation. He didn't even want to take any questions. He said, that's a personal question. Someone did
absolutely
ask him, but he said,
and
that's a personal question. That's a personal question for that player. And he left it alone. And that's where he left it at. I was very surprised that, you know, the way Yzerman did it and the way Ken Holland did it and Lou Lamoriello, who's very private too, but he has a player, and then Brody Wilde confirmed it on Instagram this afternoon, where he had someone made a comment, and he, under the comment, he made his own suggestion.
At the end of the day, too, like it takes a lot of balls for these guys to do that. They're putting themselves in.
They're losing money, though. That's the thing, right?
100%.
You have a very short career, regardless of, you know, the average NHL career is very short when you really think of it. That's why I'm bringing it up. Like, it is a personal choice at the end of the day. Connor talked about that in his media avail during the captain's camp that he didn't need to do, but he did it. And then he talked about it again today. And he says, you know, it's bigger than just getting vaccinated, is exactly what Connor said today. And which I agree, it is. It's bigger than that.
And
it's become,
you know,
a bigger thing.
Back to Duncan Keith.
This guy is very health nut, right?
I follow him on Instagram, and he's very holistic. I mean, it's to me, it seems like a lot of natural stuff. And he knows what goes in his body and what, I mean, he knows his body. Obviously, we all do better than anybody. And he, I mean, for him to do this, it speaks volumes of you know, how concerned a lot of people are. There's two sides to this, right? There's no gray area. That's the thing. It's black or it's white. You're either for it, against it.
Yeah.
There's nobody going, well, maybe, you know, it is what it is. And
yeah.
And that's the issue that lies. And on top of that is having people announce it publicly. And then, you know, it's just,
I was very surprised at that, because usually the NHL is very private with when it comes to, you know, like Rupper said, even a knee injury too. So,
yeah.
You know, Broads, we'll get your thoughts. We kind of all chimed in here, but your thoughts on all this whole situation.
I have lots of thoughts. I think it is for sure a private matter. I don't think it should be spoken aloud, to be honest. But I also think that as a team, you want these guys around, and it shows to some of them, not me, but maybe Rupper, maybe this guy or this guy on the team, that they don't want to be the best of teammates. They'd rather not do this and not, like, I think Holland said Archibald's going to miss 30 games.
Yeah.
So he's telling his teammates, I'd rather not get a vaccine than play with you for 82 games. And some guys may take that the wrong way. So I think that's going to be an issue. I'd say Bertuzzi's probably the best hockey player amongst this group of guys who aren't playing. And it's a lot easier just to say, see you later, Josh Archibald. See you later, Zach Rinaldi. We'll replace you with this guy. Done. And then I heard another guy who was an ex-NHL. He said to me, what an idiot. I said, why is he an idiot? Isn't that his choice? He goes, yeah, he's never getting that money again. That money is gone. But he's going to lose out on hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars by not doing that. He's an idiot, was his opinion.
Yeah.
So there's lots of opinions. Some, I don't, and I think like Clay said, it's divided, right? We can all think different things, and that's okay, but there's no right or wrong answer to this, right? It's each everybody's decision, and that's what he's chosen to do. So I think that'll cost him his career as an Oiler, personally.
We'll see. He's obviously not on ice now. He did his quarantine, and they're going to ease him into practice there, but you know, Mark Spector had some you know, some tough comments and some tough questions to ask Ken Holland and in the media veil when training camp opened up, and then obviously he wrote an article.
What do you think of Spector jumping all over him like that?
I didn't like
how
it.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah. And, listen, I said this, and I know you're not on Twitter, sorry to interrupt you there, but what really pissed me off, I'm trying more to be calm and not as be as more confrontational or all that, but what really pissed me off, hey, I'm trying, I know you're laughing, Vandy, but what really pissed me off was the Alex Stalock situation, who's personally affected by this. And I thought maybe that should have been more of the focus on the media veil when that came out, and it was like, okay, he talked about it. Yeah, it was. And we talked about it internally in our group chat and how brutal it is, and our thoughts and prayers are, you know, we're thinking of, you know, Alex Stalock. We put it out on Twitter and hoping the best for him and that he can be healthy. And then, you know, hopefully at some point he can get back to playing hockey if he can. But that wasn't much of a story. Like, there's an article written on this and Archibald and Duncan Keith. But I think the bigger article, in my opinion, would have been Alex Stalock, who was affected by it. But again, like, that's the media. I didn't like Spec's things. His answers, I know Ken Holland kind of ripped them, like kind of went back at him, and Ken's done that lately with some of the media here where he's just had enough. And he's all right, we're gonna throw to our interview with Anthony Stewart and Lolly Tour right now. Our next segment is sponsored by APNA Hockey, the first South Asian hockey network. They are the 2020 NHL Willie O'Ree Community Award winners. We'd like to welcome Lolly Tour, who's a founder of APNA Hockey. Lolly, how's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Good, good, buddy. Good. Nice to see you again. So we got a very special guest joining us all tonight, and we can't thank him enough for joining us. Our next guest was drafted in the first round by the Florida Panthers in 2003. Best draft ever, obviously. So, and he went on to play 262 NHL games. You can also see him on Sportsnet and Hockey Night Canada. And he is the co-founder of Stewart Hockey with his brother Chris Stewart. And he also has Twitter account that has Hockey Equality. That's kind of changing the game right now. Stewie, how's it going?
I'm doing well. It's good to see some familiar faces, but thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, we can't thank you enough. So this is pretty sweet. It's a pretty sweet interview for us to get. We've done a few of these before, and I know you and I have kind of chatted before about kind of doing them too, but finally nice to connect with you. But I guess before we jump into things, how are things going, Anthony, with you know, the summer and the kids on the ice right now?
It's going well. So again, we're with the minor hockey kids here. We sort of recovered from the pandemic here. So a lot of kids showed up on the right side of it, doing a lot of training off ice. But now that they're back on the ice, they almost have like a new hunger for it right now, and they're doing well. So I'm coaching a minor midget team next year, and looks pretty promising. We're probably going to have a couple first round picks. So that's good. It's exciting to go to the rink, but it's just happy. I'm just happy to be on the ice, and time flies when you're on the ice. So anything I can do to give back, but definitely great to be back on the ice with the kids.
Yeah, no, that's it's great to see Brody here. He coaches his kids and
minor midget too.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll get an exhibition game going. Let's
go. Yeah, great. We'll meet in Manitoba. Yeah.
Okay, we're on our way.
Yeah.
So before we kind of jump into everything, and some of the people that don't know, how did Stewart Hockey start? When did it start? When did you and Chris get this up and running?
Well, I started because I was the first one to retire, and I retired probably about 30 years old. And this was something I knew that I was going to do, whether I have $100 million or $10 million in the bank. It was just something to give back, because my brother and I had a lot of help throughout our careers as youngsters. And so the ability to get back on the ice and give back to the community that helped us, that's something that was near and dear to our hearts. So I started when I retired, and I urge pretty much any, you know, retiring guy, you sort of feel, you know, a little bit upset about the way things end. You find a love and a new passion for the game being on the ice with kids, especially when you're putting in as many hours as I have, because these kids are getting better by the week, the month, the year, just seeing that continued growth where, you know, I've been with some kids now for the last 7 years, just seeing them now turn into draft picks. It's definitely, definitely fulfilling. So we did it because we wanted to help back and give back, excuse me. And my brother right now is adding an extension to the program. You know, he purchased Minnesota Hockey Camps as a sleepover camp for 100 kids. And so now we're just extending our reach throughout Canada and U.S. And we're going to have some great collaborations and partnerships with different groups to really help grow the game and really shows the support for the kids. And that's what it should be all about, the next generation of kids. And I'm happy to be a part of that.
Yeah, no, it's very special to see. So where do your guys' goals for, you know, the next probably 2 to 3 years? Obviously, there's bigger goals for way down the road, but you kind of sometimes you want to maybe start small and go into bigger chunks. But where are things at right now for the next few years?
Well, in minor hockey, there's usually a reset where you take a group from Adam to minor midget, then you reset and go back down. I'm taking the opposite approach. Well, we're now going up with the kids. So you know, we're in the talks with, you know, junior teams. My brother has a junior team in Minnesota. So, you know, some kids maybe end up playing there next year. We've been sending a couple kids this year from Toronto to play in the Minnesota junior leagues out there as well, too. You know, we're getting involved with some agencies and helping kids as well, too. But at the end of the day, we're on the ice helping, coaching these kids. You know, I've collaborated with Matt Nickel and training some of his pros and some of his junior guys as well, too. So we're just creating that, you know, system and helping these kids, because when you get to a certain age that when you don't really find success right away, you sort of tend to quit or not really know where to go. We're creating that pipeline and really having a system that can really help kids get to the next level, whether it's the OHL, whether it's university, whether it's you want to be a ref. We have resources for that too. So just really having that system to help kids thrive and stay in the game of hockey.
Well, it's obviously it's we need it now, I think, in this game. You know, the game's growing, and I know on your website there, for stewarthockey.com there, you guys have some information breaking down of how many kids from, you know, you're involved in the game, but also how many kids are in players are involved in the NHL that coming from all different backgrounds. You know, if they're half white, half black, if they're indigenous, you know, Nazem Kadri being Lebanese and all that too. And it's great seeing, like, I play ball hockey and half of my team is they're Lebanese. from India, or, you know, we got some black kids on our team too. And I think it's pretty sweet, you know, seeing that a lot more now in the game too. But I want to speak to, you know, a tweet that I saw over the summer. Elliot Friedman tweeted out, a colleague of yours, you know, had you a picture of you on the ice with the kids, and Darnell Nurse was out and helping you guys out and doing some talking with the kids. Like, how important was that to have Darnell Nurse be a part of what you guys are trying to do and growing the game forward here?
It's definitely great, because it's representation matters. And when they see a guy at the pinnacle of his career, especially after signing that big, big contract, that shows, hey, here's a guy that is, you know, a multimillionaire, and he's here because, you know, in his mind, you know, we matter to him. So to show that, you know, he's out there, and having that representation definitely, definitely helped. But I don't want to mention a consolation prize, but I think the person that really stole the show was Wayne Simmonds. And Wayne Simmonds came, he spoke to the group, but what was most important to them was he was talking to each kid individually on the side. And it wasn't about the cameras being there. And again, a lot of people didn't see the cameras with Wayne there, because he was just there on a friend level, on a personal level, really talking to these kids. Because that same conversation that Wayne was having with those kids, that's what I had with him when he was 15 and 16 years old, when no one really knew who he was. But in my mind, I knew him and my brother were going to have great careers, because they had those other tools, those stuff that we're teaching, personal, being on time, being a good teammate, all those other factors. That's what we're trying to instill with the kids, because, yeah, you can be talented at hockey, but there's a lot of other factors that go into making the National Hockey League. And you can see a lot of guys that haven't made it that have been world-class talents, but those lessons that we're teaching. So amazing for Darnell to come out, and Wayne as well too, because these kids saw these guys and they're like, these guys know your coach, Anthony. And I'm like, these are my boys. So yeah, it was definitely great to have them out. And it was an experience they're never going to forget.
No, they definitely aren't. And I, you know, one of our sponsors is Shadified Salon and Barbershop here in Edmonton, and Lolly knows them very well too. And Darnell goes to that place all the time. That's where he gets his haircut. And there's been several times I've been there getting my haircut at the same time. And as he walks in, every single person from the door he walks in to go into the back to get his haircut, like, it's all in one big room. But as he walks to the back, every single person he says hi to, he acknowledges them. So, and that just says to me the person that Darnell Nurse is, and what we're trying to get, you know, and everyone to be, right? It's great to see him being there. We've had Mike Fuda on the podcast. He's a colleague of yours too. But you talked about Wayne Simmonds there, but I want you to talk about him a bit more. You know, because Fuda talked about him in great at length and how great he is as a person. You know, talk about him coming back home in Toronto, being a Leaf, but also, you know, being in that roots of the GTA area. That's going to be great for our kids in that area, but also other areas in Canada in the game too.
Yeah, he's definitely been a great addition to the Leafs. And, you know, when I played, you know, guys from Toronto, they didn't want to play in Toronto just because of the media. And, you know, the gets to a bit of a circus atmosphere at times. You know, you got to talk to, you know, 20, 30, 40 reporters sometimes after games, where if you're in a smaller market, I was in Carolina, there's one guy there and, you know, just saying hi, he doesn't want to interview. So for him to really step up and come here and taking a risk and taking a haircut with regards to salaries just shows his passion for Toronto and, you know, the team as well too. So the team, I think he really believes they have a shot to win, because he did have some other options on deadline day last year where he could have signed for more money, but he believes in the group. But I think he really has that passion where, you know, they haven't won the Stanley Cup in how many years. In his mind, he thinks that he can be the catalyst to help put them over the top to win that Stanley Cup. So for him to step up and take that risk where he could have easily went off into the sunset and played in Florida or somewhere else and made his, you know, $2-3 million. But that just shows what kind of competitor that he is. And the one thing is, when everyone sees him off the ice, they're like, that can't be Wayne Simmonds. Wayne Simmonds is bigger than that, but he just plays that big, where I've had teammates over the years, how much is he weighing? You know, 210, 215. I'm like, no, he's like 180 pounds soaking wet, but yeah, he is just a killer. So I think, you know, he got some injury problems last year, but he signed a 2-year extension this year, and he's definitely going to be a fan favorite, where I'm seeing Wayne Simmonds jerseys in the short time that he's played here, and he's going to be a fan favorite. And I can see him, if they win a Stanley Cup, him getting a statue in Legends role, as they say.
Yeah, no, for sure. One more before I throw it to Brody here. Hockey equality, Stewie, you know, play for all. It's great to see you on Instagram and Twitter. You know, thoughts of I think you had a shirt there, Lolly. Is that
I was just fixing okay. the
clock. Yeah, so
that in the mail. It's in the mail, Lolly. Don't worry.
Yeah, so you had some merch already, but you know, talk about the Twitter account, the Instagram account. You know, as we see in this day and age, social media is so huge. Talk about what you guys are trying to do with that platform. And on the social media front.
Yeah, well, you know, hockey quality is just the extension of sort of Stuart Hockey, what I've been doing, you know, out of pocket for the last 6-7 years, where I've been sponsoring kids on the ice, off the ice. And, you know, my wife does the books for my hockey school. And, you know, I have 20-30 kids on the ice every time. And she's like, well, where's the money? She thinks I'm funneling money. But I'm like, no, there's some kids that can afford to pay. There's some kids that can pay half. There's some kids that can pay zero. So I don't really discriminate based on, you know, kids' finances too. But I think now, just with what's going on in the world, we have an ability to sort of now grow the game and have the world listen to really what's going on. You know, for this game to sort of, you know, have sustainability, you need people from different races, backgrounds, genders to really start falling in love with the game of hockey. And I think the main issue, especially in Toronto, is just the price. You know, I have ice contracts for 2 hours, and that ice contract is $27,000. So for me to run a hockey school, I have to have legit probably 10, 12 kids paying $80, which is way too much just to go on the ice for 1 hour. So hockey quality now is raising funds to really now alleviate a lot of those hard costs that come with registration, come with equipment. And again, you see my tweets about sticks. I went and bought a kid two sticks the other day, $750 plus HST. I wanted to snap. So through hockey quality, we're raising funds, we're raising awareness, and really, you know, making a change in some of these kids' life. And again, coming from someone that's been on the ground, some of these kids that are going to be graduating from the program, you're going to know their name. And I can tell them at 14, 15 years old, they're going to be first round OHL draft picks. They're going to be world juniors. And they happen just to not look like everybody else. You know, there's kids with dreadlocks. There's kids that, you know, have mohawks. And we did an event last month for the Black players now. But next month, we're going to be doing one for the Indigenous kids. And we're going to have Ted Nolan out and Brandon Nolan and Ron McLean's going to show support. So it's just creating that atmosphere and bubble of saying, hey, here's people in the industry, not just hockey, that are successful. And you have an opportunity to be successful regardless of what path you have. We're here to help steer you in the right direction.
That's awesome. So how can people donate? You know, is there a donation website that people can go to and donate if they want to help out too?
Yeah. You can go to hockeyequality.org, and there's a donate page there as well too. And we're going to be having a new program now where you can purchase a beginner set of equipment. So we're going to be now donating equipment to kids. And we just teamed up with one of the organizations, the OMHA, the York Simcoe Express, where I think they got together 500 sets of equipment to ship up north to some of the Indigenous communities. So we're just raising awareness, raising funds, and you know, just growing the game on a whatever level we can, whether it helps one kid or 1,000 kids. It's just, that's what charity is about, trying to make a difference one day at a time and one kid at a time as well.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll, on our podcast, we're going to jump in on that and help you guys out and
perfect.
Some Thank of you. Our sponsors. So I'll, when we jump off here, we'll, I'll get in contact with you and talk about that. So go ahead, Broads, take it away, bud.
You've done a great job so far. Thanks. We're talking about inclusivity, diversion, those type of things. Is your company just based out east? How do you get, I'm out west here in Edmonton. Is there anything similar, or are you branching out here?
Well, I'll direct that question to APNA Hockey, and we've had some conversations mm-hmm. where we're going to be making it Canada-wide and US-wide as well, too, where we're going to be collaborating and having some exclusive partnerships with companies where you can actually help. But my goal is through Hockey Quality is in every US and Canadian city, we want programs up and running, whether it's a 1 week or whether it's a full winter season. That's the plan. So it's great that, you know, there's different pockets and different companies that are sort of doing their own thing under Hockey Quality. What we're trying to do is try to get everybody under an umbrella that now can raise funding and alleviate their prices, whether they're in, you know, Saskatoon or Vancouver, they have that programming. So we're looking to get the NHL involved. We're looking to get everybody involved too, but we're starting off in Toronto, but we're going to be expanding to the US and probably out west a lot sooner than later.
That's outstanding. I like that you're at grassroots and you're trying to bring the NHL involved as well. Do you feel like minority players in the NHL, they have a need to help out and chip in and help, or is that kind of individualized as to who should be?
Yeah, I think every player that's played there, that's a minority, sort of realizes that they didn't just get there on pure skill, right? They've had mentors, they've had financial assistance, but they've had people sort of go above and beyond. Whether, you know, it was myself when I first started, I had a cousin that played in the OHL. That's where I got my first set of equipment. You know, I had people, you know, I've lived with families for summers or a full year, and just having them now, these people aren't rich, going above and beyond to make sure I'm fed well and dressed well and, you know, have a ride to the arena and paid for. I think they really have that appreciation saying, hey, I didn't get here by myself. Let me do what I can to help the next generation. And that's sort of, I think, where the message gets lost. And a lot of people, when they make it, they sort of, some people lose sight of that. But I think the minority players, they know that people have gone above and beyond for them, and they're more than willing to do it for others as well.
That's great. Do you feel Mr. Wang was really trying to promote the game in China? You see Mr. Schneider in Philadelphia was really good. His program's going as well. Do you feel like owners have to step up as well and provide a little bit more, whether it's money, programming, initiatives, anything? Or are you trying to get involved with that as trying to get that 32 teams out?
Yeah, I think a lot can be done. And, you know, when Seattle first started, I got a call from a representative there, and they wanted me to move down there and help with their grassroots. But I said, my work in Toronto is not done, and I don't think Sportsnet will appreciate that. So I'll pass that for the next couple of years too. But I think that's sort of where it needs to start, from the top and the owners, and then getting involved. And I could just imagine if I was, you know, 9, 10 years old and I get to go on the ice and skate at Scotiabank Arena and I see Austin Matthews, I'm going to be a fan, and I'm probably going to be a Scotiabank customer as soon as possible. So I think they can have some ideas to at least get the kids there to really see what they're missing out on. And that's how it was with my dad. My dad immigrated in the 70s to Montreal. And all he saw was Montreal Canadiens winning Stanley Cups. And to this day, all he talks about when explaining my game or how I need to play is Bob Gainey, Larry Robertson, Shutt, all these guys, Guy Lafleur. And that was someone from Jamaica that didn't even know that hockey existed. To this day, you know, 40, 50 years later, is still a fan.
That's outstanding. My wife's black. I've got two kids who play hockey. So what I see is them being the only black kid on the team, or the, you know, wherever we go, they're one of the minorities. So I'm sure that they've dealt with racism over the years of hockey, sadly, but probably never going to end. Sadly, well, I shouldn't say never, hopefully it will, but they've experienced N-words a couple times and bad things being said to them on the ice, just to kind of get them off their game. Yeah. Any advice to your kids moving forward to kind of help them with that, help them deal with that?
Well, hockey is a contact sport, and you're allowed to hurt your opponent within the rules. But I tell everybody that's not exclusive to hockey. That could be happening at the bus stop. That could be happening on the playground at school. And if someone's calling you names or trying to take you down, that's because they're probably beneath you and they're trying to drag you down to their level. And trust me, I've had that experience, you know, throughout my career. But I'm telling you, the places that I've been and the places that I've seen because of the game of hockey, the positive outweighs the negative, you know, tenfold. Yeah. So yeah, it sucks. It's going to hurt your feelings. But again, a lot of those people are nowhere. And then I've had the opportunity through the game of hockey to, you know, climb the ranks and make it a career that's really changed my life too. So yeah, if it happens on the ice, well, you get the number and then get them at another time too. But just know that they're probably losers. So for lack of better words, I think you can say that now in regards to racism, but don't let it affect you. Just sort of, you know, try to keep your head up, and there's going to be detractors everywhere you go, not just on the ice.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks.
No, it's very well said. Lolly, get you involved here. Where do you see things going here now? And how do you see the, you know, programs developing with you guys, you know, kind of joining up together? I know you, and talk about, you guys had a great, great conference call not too long ago together.
You went me, Dampy, and Anthony and his wife had a really good conversation about just about collaboration, right? At the end of the day, Anthony, he's a black man. He's not a South Asian guy, right? I mean, he's not indigenous either, but how can we bring in the right people to do the right work? Obviously we run, you know, the South Asian Hockey Network. We got some programs rolling out with the Flames and the Edmonton Oilers now. But like what Anthony has done with basically just bringing in like the top end talent from the Black community, right? And then having them in front of, you know, Wayne Simmonds, Darnell Nurse. We've been trying to do that, right? That's our goal, right? We want these kids to realize that there's more of them that look like them, and there's players that look like them that play at very high levels, right? At the end of the day, these athletes in our community that are playing at the NHL level, like Jojo Kara, or out in Europe, like Sahir Gill, they are role models to these kids that are coming up through the ranks, right? So, I mean, this mentorship is, it's a must, right? I mean, throughout hockey development, and I always just bring it back to kind of what I went through. I felt isolated growing up. I didn't have role models. My dad immigrated from India, you know, in the early 80s, loved the game, but it was just me and him trying to, you know, navigate through AAA hockey in the prairies, right? And it wasn't fun, right? And Anthony mentioned that, you know, you see the racism, you hear the racism. I felt the systemic racism, but I folded. I mean, I still remember I went headhunting against other kids, right? Especially if they would call me a Paki or, you know, whatever, terrorist or whatever. I would go headhunting, right? Because again, that's the best part about hockey. You can show on the ice that what you're really made of, right? But mentally, it did affect me growing up. And that's why when we want to create these, you know, programs like how Anthony brought all the top black athletes together in Toronto, we want to be able to create this programming for South Asian kids too, right? Have the top athletes together and then get the youth involved as well, right? So they can get mentored by them. I think we have very similar goals. And that's why I think this would work, right, under hockey quality. If we're running any kind of South Asian programming out here in the West or even out in Toronto, we have a network that spans basically North America, out in Europe, Australia, it's everywhere, India as well, right? So I think with us, there's definitely going to be a synergy with us in hockey quality. I think it's just more so about let's try to get the right people together and get the right kids together, right? Because at the end of the day, it's all about the next generation, because the athletes in our community, both female and male, they're playing at the highest level. Now we got to let our community know that, hey, they do exist, right? And what better way to do that than bring them together? And I think, I'm pretty sure, Anthony, you could probably talk a bit more about this, but when those Black athletes come together, right, they see one another. They talk to one another, right? And then you get Darnell to come out, Wayne Simmonds to come out. That's an environment that I've been talking to, you know, with the NHL. I'm in New York City right now, so hopefully I can get into Gary's ear or Kim Davis here pretty soon. But these are the type of interactions I think the NHL needs to focus on, right? Because it's not only about the athletes having that mentorship, but from a business perspective, it's also opening doors for revenue, right? I have an MBA and like I'm a very business savvy guy, and I realized that, you know, out of the four major sports, just like I told Anthony at our conference call, it's the least paid sport out of the four major sports in North America, right? So how do you grow the game and diversify it to a point where, yeah, you're gaining more revenue too, right? Well, I have my people back home, or what, there's 1.3 billion people back home, right? That's a lot of people, just like China, right? And in my opinion, there's a lot of inherent interest in hockey because of field hockey, right? So, I mean, it's about the athletes, you know, the top ones trying to make it to the NHL, make it to that pro level. But it's also about just creating fandom, right? You want to create genuine fans of the game. We just teamed up with the esports platform from Vancouver. We're going to try to get these kids that, you know, maybe never played hockey. Let's get them into the video games. And then the prizes we're going to have for these video games is hockey equipment. So they kind of get more into the game, right? A hockey stick. And use different avenues to get more kids into the game, especially from our community, right? Esports, obviously, it just flies over my head and my co-founder Dempsey's 46 or 45, sorry. And so we don't play video games, but it's an avenue to get kids more engaged into it, especially the ones that have never played it ever, right? And once they're in, there's avenues to try out hockey, right? Especially if you're in Edmonton, they can register into the Upper Hockey Oilers First Shift program, or down in Calgary, the Flames First Shift program, and try hockey for the first time, right? But the key aspect, I think the key takeaway is you can have these camps, but you have to have the right people on the ice, right? I mean, it doesn't make any sense having a bunch of South Asian kids on the ice and then having all you know, Oilers alumni that are white, former white hockey players on the ice. It doesn't make any sense. I got to be there. Damps has got to be there. These prominent South Asian athletes in their communities have to be there, right? That way there's that genuine connection between the kids and the instructors. But overall, Josh, like, I mean, we are working on this. It hasn't been an easy road, right? And I know me and Josh have had some conversation about, you know, winning the Willie O'Ree, right? It's been an eye opener to just see how much support we got for it. But at the same time, it's been tough getting people on board with some of our programming, right? Because at the end of the day, when I'm looking at this from a business perspective and just purely revenue wise, you're looking at a hockey market that's, in my opinion, untapped, right? The hockey has gone to China, right, for a reason. And we all know why they went to China and why they wanted to start programming there, why they want the players to be out there. It's to have that same effect like the NBA. It's all about, you know, revenue and you know, more eyes on your product. So when we're talking about the South Asian community specifically, this is where I kind of get lost. What makes us so different, right? We don't have ice. I understand that, but we have field hockey. We have ball hockey. There's inline hockey, right? There's different forms of hockey that need to be appreciated. At the end of the day, hockey's hockey, right? We're going to try to grow the game that way, help the kids, you know, from an elite perspective, and try to get as many kids from our community in the game, right? That's our bottom line.
Yeah. Stewie, thoughts on that and what, you know, your interactions you and your wife had with, Damps a few weeks ago and Lolly and what they're kind of do, what they're doing with their program.
No, it's definitely been great. And like you said, our interests are really aligned. And, you know, he made a great point saying, you know, the different groups have different needs, right? So the black hockey players have different needs from the South Asian community as well. And he mentioned that, you know, they're even looking at possibly, you know, as a group getting together and purchasing an NHL team. So I'm not trying to spoil your guys' plan or anything, but that just shows how much you want to, you know, break through some of these barriers. But the way that I do it, and people call me an optimist and, you know, I'm crazy, is that, you know, why not put 20 black players in the league in the next 10 years? And I can attest to it because I'm on the front lines. I see this skill. And I think with the proper mentorship and the proper programming, you can definitely have that. And I'm saying, everyone's saying, well, let's go grow the game here. You know, there could be the next LeBron James of hockey that just can't even get on the ice to start. And again, and I think the true tragedy is there would be no, you know, Chris Stewart or Wayne Simmonds or Devontae Smith-Pelly if the prices were now that they were back then, because even a middle-class family would not be able to afford themselves how to play hockey. But even now, to now pay for somebody else and the resources needed to produce a hockey player too. So with hockey quality and all these other programming, what we're trying to do now is just have the financial constraints, you know, be released so they don't have to worry about that. They can get on the ice. And if they have enough hours of programming, and, you know, you guys and Damps can sort of really attest to this. If you had, you know, a 200-hour program a year, just imagine the talent of players that they could produce in the next 5-10 years. And India, they'll be coming over and they'll be watching. If there's 10 players of South Asian descent in the National Hockey League, that's how it was with the NBA, Yao Ming and Linsanity, all that, because they saw the representation there. So I think that should be the goal, not just from the programming, but from the league. How do we get these players there? So I think that's the genesis of the question, what it should be. How do we get more minorities in the sport? And it's a question, do they? It's yet to be answered. But for me, my job is to create the next generation of kids that are going to be so good. You can't tell them to get a haircut. You can't tell them to take their earrings out. You can't tell them to change their clothes, because the talent on the ice and the product of that ice on the ice is going to be that great. And I'm telling you, these kids, especially in my program, they're better hockey players than me. Again, I was a big, strong guy. I had some skill, but just this pure skill. And I think with the proper programming and support, you're going to see 2 or 3, 4 more Quentin Byfields in the next 5 years. I'm telling you, I'm seeing it. I'm living it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, no, it's true. You watch NFL games, and when they do take their helmets off, you know, from Cam Newton to, you know, many other players, where they got the jewelry on, they got their hairs different. What would people call to them? It's every hairstyle is, you know, different, but you can tap into the NHL with that too. You know, where that doesn't matter. You know, you watch it, you're like, hey, that's a cool style. Like, talk about Austin Matthews. There's so much conversation that he's wearing an earring the other day. Like, just going crazy about him wearing an earring. And then, whatever.
Josh, like, just, yeah. Sorry, Josh, just to jump off that, like, I mean, yeah, you're bringing Austin Matthews up. I think he's wonderful for the game of hockey. Like, did you just see his collaboration with Justin Bieber?
Yeah, true.
Like, I mean, this is what hockey needs, right? And I mean, this is stepping away from, like, you know, development, you know, on ice stuff, off ice training. But when you look at hockey as overall as a brand, it's a very boring, like, brand, right? You don't see personalities in hockey. You have a certain robotic way of, you know, navigating through hockey. You don't step out of line. You don't have this talk like, you know, how in the NBA, is it LeBron? Is it MJ? Like, who's the GOAT? Like, we don't have these conversations because the culture of hockey kind of constrains us, right? And it's like, oh, we shouldn't be talking about that, right? Like, even personalities, like me growing up, my favorite player was Alexander Ovechkin. Why? Because of his personality. Guy came out in 06 with a tinted visor. I'd never seen one before that. And the way he presented himself, his passion, his enthusiasm, just his personality, just like it just breaks through. It gravitates people towards that. And it's unfortunate that you don't see more of it in the NHL. And I don't see it with, you know, some of the best players in this league, right? Because they tend to be robotic. But again, Austin Matthews is doing his thing, right? I mean, yeah. We just posted a video. I don't know if you guys know Nav, the rapper.
Yeah,
he's from Toronto.
I didn't know he played hockey. I didn't know. He went barred out.
I didn't know either, right? I have a buddy that knows him. And so I'm messaging my buddy. I'm like, man, Nav is playing hockey? I was like, buddy, if he wants to get in touch with the Maple Leafs or if he wants to do some sort of collaboration with us, let me know because that's going to grow the game, right? In our community, Nav is massive, right? He's the first brown guy to, you know, get these deals with Weekend, you know, be on same tracks like Drake and stuff. But like, man, this is what hockey needs. It's this, I mean, there's a celebrity aspect of it too, right? And I don't know, Anthony, if I might've, you know, touched upon it on our last call, but like Nav Bhatia, right? The super fan. You know how many fans he's created in our community just with
his presence? I bought a car from him because of his commercials, yeah.
Really? No way.
Yeah, I did.
Like, it's crazy to think, like, you know, you empower someone in the community that has, you know, a voice, or you, like, the NBA has empowered Nav Bhatia, right? I don't think the NHL has empowered anyone in the South Asian community per se, other than us, right, with the award. But it's not just a one-time thing. You got to keep throwing us out there, right? You got to get Dams' face out there, right? We're talking with the World Junior stuff in Red Deer and Edmonton. I was like, get Dampy's face out there, right? We're working on some kind of collaborative stuff that I can't say right now, but it's going to be pretty fun come around, you know, December with the World Juniors and kind of what we have in store with Dampy. But again, just collaboration and getting the name out and making sure that, you know, people are interested, right? This collaboration with Drew with the, I think it's the socks, the, you know, the t-shirts.
Yeah.
And I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. No, it's a smart idea. So, I guess one more before we let everyone go here. Lolly, do you have one last question you want to ask Anthony? Anything before we let him go?
I know, Brody, you touched upon Charles Wang, and I brought this up as well, and I read it actually on Instagram. But, like, I certainly think, I know, Anthony, you mentioned that, you know, we are very interested. That's the reason why I would love to meet with Gary here in New York City. Is to introduce myself, right? I'm only 29, but at the end of the day, I've gotten to know in the last 4 years since starting up my hockey, you know, through the MBA program, through just networking, I've met billionaires in our community, right? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of them. And our community is not a shortage of cash either. So, I mean, that's another big thing. If there's ways to, you know, purchase a team, get into minority stake ownership, because like when Charles Wang was alive, he did set up programs with Asian youth in the New York, on the island here in New York, right? He had this passion to give back to his community and kind of get more of his community involved. And I don't see that so far from any of the owners per se. Correct me if I'm wrong, maybe there are programs like that. But again, I'm a firm believer it starts from the top and then, you know, there's a trickle down effect, right? So I don't know. I just want to like kind of your take on it, because I know we're both fighting the same battle. It's top down.
We talked about it last year when we were talking about the whole George Floyd situation, and I was on air and I basically said, yeah, it needs to start from the top up. And I mentioned owners, and then the host corrected me. I'm not going to say who it was. He's like, well, not necessarily owners, but you know, me more visible in the coaching community. And I'm like, why not an owner? Why not? Right. That was my question back. Well, yeah. Why can't they be ownerships? And like you mentioned, the South Asian community, yeah, they have the funds, right? There's a lot of billionaires, right? So I think it's just getting the people involved, but doing it from the top up. And you can understand it's a lot of work. Charity is a lot of work. And it basis in the genesis, you have to care. You got to have to care about the common man and bringing them up to your level. And that's what it should be about. People always ask, am I jealous of my brother's success? I'm like, no, that's probably my greatest accomplishment as a brother, as a hockey player, is making my brother a better player than I am. So I think that should be the goal, is creating a next generation better than you. And I think that's how you create the change too. So for ownership, I said a simple solution is, with regards to charity and the team, the easiest thing to do is to go on the ice, because you're on the ice all day anyways. Go on the ice and do a pleasure skate. You send one or two players every week. You open up the building for an hour and you get 50, 60 kids from whatever group out there. That'll change. That you will see a social change and impact within the community, you know, in 2-3 months. So why not just open the arenas to the fans and let them get out there and let them interact, right? And the Raptors, you know, that's why they're so big in Toronto, because they were out in the communities. They were out at schools. They were out at the hospitals pretty much every single day, because they are a new group in the city, a new business, and they had to grow the game. So just being a little bit more accessible to the players, to the fans. And I think that's the one thing the owners can do. And as a player standpoint, I'm like, you know, you could be tired, but yeah, you know what? I can go on the ice for a half an hour and then look at some kids fall and talk to them and pick them up. That's easy. So I think that's one thing that I think can really do to make a real big impact with minimal effort. Yep.
No, I agree. And like, I mean, I think it's up to the teams to understand, like, you know, a player like yourself, Anthony, when we were playing back in the day, how should they match you up with certain fans, right? There has to be, you know, some sort of, I don't know, sometimes I find that people that work in hockey just, I don't know if they don't see the connection. Like, I mean, if you see, I don't know, for example, a Black hockey player and then a Black group of hockey players from the city, you should connect those two, right? Yeah. And that seems so hard to do in hockey, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially at the top levels, right? Like, I mean, if you have a player that represents a ton of people, why don't you connect them to those people?
Yeah. Right? And you know how Lululemon grew in the NHL is because if you signed with Bauer, you get a $500 gift card for Bauer. And these guys are millionaires, but I get a $500 gift card for Lululemon. I'll do whatever you want me to do. So just, you know, add a monetary incentive to it. Hey, go run this camp once a week, or, you know, you get a player out there and you get a gift card. I'd be like, absolutely, I'll do that. Right. So you got to find a way to have an incentive, but I think it comes down to, you genuinely have to care about the people beneath you and trying to bring them up. And I think there's some people that are on board, but I think a lot more can be done to actually do that. And in turn, these people at the end of the day, these kids are, and you know, whatever backgrounds they're from, they're future customers. So why not start, you know, getting in their ears at the young age and teaching them the right way to do things. And I think that's good for business, but it's good for growing the game. But at the very most, it's helping, you know, the next generation.
And that's going to always help hockey, regardless in the future. If it's about the next generation from different communities, hockey's in a good place. But if it's continuing on this path of, you know, just being exclusive to a certain type of people, right? Or a certain type of community, it's not going to survive, right?
And the one thing I could tell you too is, and you're going to hear about it, and I already know, well, what program helped you? Hockey Quality. What program helped you? Hockey Quality. In 3-4 years, you're going to keep hearing about this. And then everyone's going to be like, oh, what's this Hockey Quality? And I already know that's going to be how it's going to come to fruition now, because I'm seeing the kids that are benefiting from this program. And I'm telling you, there's superstars. There's superstars. And I can tell at 14 and 15 years old, and I've only been doing this for 1 year now. So I could just imagine what the future is going to hold in the next 5, 7, 10 years. I think that's how we're going to really generate and, you know, produce sustainable change.
Yeah. I think there's a movement coming for sure. Cause as soon as I saw it, like I've been watching you, like I'm the same age as you, followed you through your career. I know I'm out West, but and you're out East, but even your brother, I followed him in his career too. And almost every single game that I went to when he was here in Edmonton, he ended up scoring. So he had a couple of
hotties. Fighting too.
But what I liked about it when I saw Elliot's tweet, and that's why I brought that up earlier in the question, is like, I know how passionate you are because you speak about it on air and you speak about it on your platforms that you have. And, you know, with Brody here on our podcast, it's a personal connection too. And, you know, and then knowing Lolly for the 5 years I've known him, you know, it means a lot to kind of get you on to talk about this. Cause I think more conversations like this need to happen. In my opinion, sometimes they don't happen enough. And I think, and Lolly and I have kind of talked about it, you know, Broads too. And what, you know, I think what you're doing and what Lolly's doing is just going to be so great. And you're going to see change and movement. It's already happening, but I think it's going to keep on continue happening on a faster level than what you guys are doing, because you guys are so very passionate about it. And that's something why we want to get a part, you know, be a part of it and help out any which way we can. So on our podcast, so we do a lot of charities. We did one a few months ago. We raised over $10,000 for a family. And then the other 10,000, we went to charity, and we're going to do that again next month. And, you know, your program and Lolly's program are programs we want to be a part of and help out and kick back. So,
oh, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You don't know, for sure. So we'll finish up on that. We appreciate you guys, you know, taking the time to join us today. So, any final thoughts, Broads, before we jump out? And
if you happen to have, you were mentioning you had a little camp there with all black players on the ice. If that ever happens out here, I would love to get my two boys out there. So yeah. If you do that,
why not bring them to Toronto? Let's go to Toronto, make a trip out of it. We could take you to Wonderland. We can go to the aquarium. I think now, like, you know, even in Toronto, there's people are saying, well, there's not a lot of kids. I'm like, there's 2, 3, 4 minorities per team, right? I have 4 black kids on my team this year. When I first started, you know, I had 8 Chinese players, East Asian players on my team the first year. And it wasn't because it was just, hey, these are good kids that know how to play hockey. It doesn't matter. They just happen to be Asian players. So in Toronto, it's a big, big melting pot. But again, I want to use this to sort of now expand and go everywhere, because I believe it can really make a big, big difference. And anything we can do to help, you know, be sure to hit me up and let me know.
Perfect. Thanks. All right. Well, thanks again, guys. You know, continued success. Glad hockey's back, because Stewie's going to be all over Twitter with this great gift. So yeah. I'll be pretty soon to see. So, but thanks again for joining us on the 2 Months podcast. It's an honor.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Josh.
When you hire a contractor, you want things to go smooth.
Smooth as a driveway poured by Pete's Concrete.
You want a solid guarantee.
Solid as a basement floor by Pete's Concrete.
You want Pete.
Pete's Concrete. For sidewalks, patios, your leaky basement, Pete lays his reputation down with every job, and he offers you finishes and colors you won't find anywhere else.
You want someone who proudly puts their name on the work they do.
Pete puts his name in concrete.
Pete's Concrete.
So other NHL news and notes, Kaprizov signs with the Minnesota Wild, big extension. He gets 5 years, $9 million AAV. Brody, thoughts on that deal?
I think it's fucking crazy to give that guy that much money after playing
55 some games. Yeah.
55 games. That's absolutely insane. The only thing I do like about it, if you're a Wild fan, is the contract goes down at the end. It's not like they're going to have to re-up him at a higher number.
Yeah.
But it's still insane to give a guy that much money after playing not even one full season. I know he was awesome, but come on, man. That's nuts. Nuts to me.
Yeah. Rupper, your
thoughts. I love watching him play, though. He's outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, Rupper, your thoughts on these kids getting this boatloads of money right before they even play 100 NHL games?
Well, it ain't my money that I'm throwing around, so I could care less, right?
But it's changing the game, though, right? You would have to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's changing the game. It's where are we going to be in 3 years, right? What's Connor going to make once his contract's over?
Yeah.
Because if that guy's
underpaid NHLer, in my opinion.
Yeah. So if that guy's making $9 million whenever Connor's up, he should be making 25. I'm sorry. Like, it's just the salary cap's going to be $1 billion in 2032. So it don't matter anyways, right?
Yeah. And it's going to be hard to get into rinks. So, because the tickets will go up, right? So, Maybe your brother have a nice big house too, because he works for the organization. So
yeah.
You know, Vandy, what do you think? What do you think this means? Kaprizov's deal. What do you think this means for Pettersson and Brady Tkachuk? You know, I try to tie Quinn Hughes in there, but he's a defenseman, but we'll stick it to the forwards group. Well, what do you think it means for those guys there?
I think it goes to the team select. Like, I think Brady Tkachuk gets $9 million. I think now, what was the other player you said?
Pettersson, Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If you're paying Krill the Thrill $9 mil a year, Pettersson's got a little more pedigree under his belt. He's played, you know, three more seasons, and yeah, there's no reason why they're not getting $9 million. I'm floored that he got it. Now, I want to ask you guys this: do you think this has to do where he's playing and you know, the nickname and all that, the marketing ability that he's going to bring to the Minnesota Wild? He's now known throughout the league as, you know, Krill the Thrill, and away you go. Is that, you know, selling jerseys, that kind of thing?
Well, he's their best player, right?
100%. And yeah. Minnesota hasn't seen a player like this
since Marian Gaborik.
Yeah. And even it
could even be better than Gaborik, but that would
absolutely
be
good. Yeah. But you know, I think this is more of a marketing sign too, as well. You know, get if you, I don't know.
Get some more eyes on your product, right?
So we spoke about, you know, what, a couple podcasts ago. I didn't think they would do this.
Give in, but he did,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I mean, now who knows what Ottawa's going to do and then what Vancouver's going to do. But I don't know. You're going to have to agree with Rupp. You're going to have to start paying these kids.
Yeah.
That's probably the smartest thing you've ever said on this podcast, Clay.
What?
That's the smartest thing you've ever said on this podcast.
Yeah, well, I have my moments.
Yeah.
A broken clock's right twice a day. But
all right. Well, shift
is
gears.
Is that the motto?
I know, that's saying it ain't a mock.
Well, shift gears
sober,
out east.
And I'm sober, so
shifting gears out east. Jack Eichel gets stripped of the captaincy in Buffalo today, as their Kevin Adams comes out and talks about that in the press conference. You know, thoughts on that, Vandy? You and I kind of were chatting about this before we jumped on, but you know, this slow divorce gets even more interesting as the days go on. There's always something new every week.
How in the hell do you, unless you're ready to move them, and how do you just strip them of the C? And I know I'm probably going to catch heat for this, but at the end of the day, and look, I don't know if he's going to stay in Buffalo or what he's doing or whatever, but how do you just up and strip your captain of the C unless you're moving him within a week or a month? Or
he's not playing one more game there.
I agree with that, but at the end of the day, and I guess maybe that was their way of saying we're moving on, but
yeah.
I mean, I don't know, just to strip him and like to do it publicly like that is just like, they could have done it behind closed doors. No.
Well, they talked to him 2 days before, and then they talked to the team yesterday, and then they made the news the next day. So, you know, it's not like he didn't know. He knew. They informed him on what they were going to do. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'll throw this question to you, Rupper. You know, when Tim Murray was the general manager of the Buffalo Sabres, when they drafted Jack Eichel, you know what? They didn't want Jack Eichel. That was obviously the Connor McDavid draft. They were trying to tank. They would have, like, Jonas Enroth would go in net, and he would have like 3 wins in a row, and all of a sudden he's in the minors because he won 3 games in a row. They were trying to do everything that they could to tank to get that first pick. They didn't get it. And then when they drafted Jack Eichel, there was kind of like this, like, we didn't really want him. We kind of wanted Connor. But do you think this kind of stems like to then with this relationship with the organization and Eichel, that he was never really wanted there? What do you think on that, Rupper?
How long has this fiasco been going on with him in Buffalo?
This, like, is about a year. He started the season, and then he played a couple games, a handful of games, and then the injury came up. And then they've known for quite some time that he's needed a procedure. The organization wants him to get a fusion in the neck, and he wants to get a dick dick replacement.
Dick extension.
I said
a dick extension. Leave it in. Leave it in.
That's a disc replacement. So they so that's the second time that you know, I've said that. I apologize, but yeah, it's been like it's been a back and forth situation with this organization on this, and I just think it's crazy that it's gotten to this point today. I think it's an absolute joke. I think it makes Jack Eichel look bad. I think it makes the Buffalo Sabres look bad. I think everyone in this situation looks like a fucking stupid fucking idiot, to be honest. Like, it's like, figure it out, stop being a bitch, and get the situation figured out already, man. Just get move on. Every time you see his name pop up,
like a dick or an idiot.
He looks like an idiot. He looks like just a cried little spoiled little baby, in my opinion. I'm just sick and tired of this guy, man. Like, it's just like, fucking figure it out, move on, stop fucking, you know, like, it's always got to be something with him, right? Like, if he's not in the news and he's tweeting out an emoji on Twitter, like, he's fucking, I'm deleting my Twitter account, I'm activating it, I'm tweeting an emoji. Like, shut the fuck up, man. Straight up. Honestly, man, the guy just pisses me off. You know, the organization.
I thought you were working on your anger.
No, I was, but like, I'm just like, it's like, come on, man, like, figure it out already, move on, you know, like, in my opinion, I just think it looks stupid on both people, you know, like, now it's gone to this point.
You know who Jack Eichel is? He's Bo Callahan from Draft Day.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
It's a great call.
He is, Rufford.
It's a great call.
But, like, honestly, I watched when I was probably, I can't even remember, 21 or 22, Days of Our Lives, when Marlena was possessed by the devil. That was one year of a soap opera. And this is way more painful, boys. Like, I can't even believe it. I'm with Bosco. Wrap it up, pack them up, and ship them out already. Like, it ain't a fit. It's not working. It ain't a fit. I don't care what happened. They didn't want to draft him. They did want to draft him. He's playing his game. They're playing their game. Just wrap it up and move him on. Because,
but it's just always something, though. Like, he fires his agent, hires a new agent. Sure. He takes a flight. He says he can't go on ice. Then he flies all his gear to Montreal. So there's a speculation he got traded to Montreal. Nope, he's going to Montreal for the BioSteel camp. But he's not going to do any on ice, but he brought all his gear. It's just like, you know, it's just after – it's just one thing after another – with him, and then it's like the organization, it's like one thing after another with them. And that's just where I just like, I'm like, you know, every week we're talking about it. It's like, hey, well, this has gone on for like 10 months now. Like, figure it out.
You know why? You know why? Like, sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Brody, thoughts on this? Brody, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, one, I think you got to work on your anger, Bosco. Like, that went off the rails quick with your anger. Holy, that was 0 to 1,000. They need to, it's easy for me to say, they need to just to move them and move on already. But they're obviously not, because they're getting shit offers. So I don't mind the fact that they stripped him of a C. I wish they would have literally say nothing. Just show up on opening night and say, hey, here's our new captain. It's Rupper. Let's play. Like, there's no need to make a spectacle of it. All they're doing is lessening their bargaining position, and they're going to get even less for them than what they are being offered. So it's getting worse and worse for Buffalo, of course, and Buffalo Sabre fans. Them and the Oilers, just absolute debacles of organizations for decades.
Yeah, it's just not good. Not good at all. So, you know, move on. You know, I just think the situation's got to get better at some point here, and I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel
What does Eichel garner in a trade?
Wow, his agent is saying a first round pick, a second round pick, top six forward, and a prospect, like four assets.
I think they were asking for 5 or 6 pieces, right?
Yeah.
But they're not getting it. They're going to get a first round pick. They had a good prospect and a player, probably.
Yeah.
His pinball machine?
He's fucking good, though. I'd love him here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously not realistic, but God, he'd be good.
Yeah.
He's a hell of a hockey player.
Yeah, when he's healthy, he's good. But speaking of when they're healthy, obviously Geno Malkin and Sidney Crosby, when they're healthy, they're good. But Evgeny Malkin, his nickname is Geno. He's going to be out for 2 months to start the season. That's a big blow to the Penguins trying to push for a playoff spot in a tough division. And then we still don't know with Sidney Crosby. It sounds like he might miss like 2 to 3 weeks to start the year. But how huge is this for the organization, Vandy?
Well, I mean, I just so happened to flip on NHL Network, and I think Phil Bork was talking. They're talking he's like maybe after Christmas, perhaps, is when.
What's the issue?
I don't know. I didn't hear that. But, you got Tristan Jarry there coming off, you know, kind of a mediocre season, if you will. And then, you know, it's going to be a tough go for that team. They're kind of, I don't know. You guys say they're in a rebuild, like not a rebuild, but they're kind of preparing for.
Well, this is the next 2 to 3 years is probably where they're at. But, you know, I'd be surprised if, you know, you just hired Brian Burke and you got Ron Hextall there. Like, I don't think they're rebuilding anytime soon. Okay. Crosby still has time on his deal. You know, so I just think like Malkin's injury.
I don't know. Losing those two guys, getting back to your question, losing those two guys start the season, it's
Jeff Carter's your number one center, right?
Yeah. And
they got to be used to it. Don't think the Malkin across the road was hurt.
Yeah. But I mean, they've always had the depth. I don't know if they have the depth anymore. You have a 37-year-old centerman. Not Carter can still put up numbers, but. I mean, can he play 18, 19, 20 minutes a game anymore?
He's going to have to.
Oh, I know. But I think they're going to, you know, I don't think they make the playoffs unless Jarry can do what he can do and come out and steal games for him. And
yeah,
I mean, they're not in like a weak division. They're in probably the best division in the NHL. So
yeah,
games are important. At the beginning of the year, that's going to come back to bite you.
Yeah, not going to be an easy road for them. That's for sure. Thoughts on that, Broads? That situation there unfolding, and how do you see them coming out of it?
Oh, I don't know, man. Huge losses. 2 months, and I saw on Twitter Malkin's out 2 months. Like, that's a long time. So hopefully they. Well, I don't know. I guess they're gonna. Try to end up 500 and in and around there until they get the help back. But if Crosby's only 2 weeks, Crosby's just fine back there, right? If Malkin's out and he's only misses, 2 weeks? What's that, 7-8 games, give or take? Probably a little bit less than that.
25.
So they can get by. They'll be fine. They got Sidney Crosby, man.
Yeah. Yeah, the best player in the world, right?
Best players in the world.
I'd say the best player.
Hey, Broads. Broads, that's kind of like the Caps right now, going through a little injury trouble with Snickers, eh?
That's right, yeah.
We need him back.
Three wrist issues.
Three wrist problems.
And a bubble fracture in July. And it's now didn't heal. Then they had to just reset it, put him under and reset it. That didn't work. Didn't take. And now he's had surgery. And he had, let's say, 12 screws in his wrist. And he's 12
years old. What do you guys got, the Buffalo doctors working for you or what?
Exactly. Don't let me go off again, okay?
No. That's a shout out to Zachary Nyker.
Yeah.
Get well soon, Zach.
Yeah, exactly.
Snickers.
And speaking of a good segue, speaking of get well soon and someone that got well and he's going to make a return this year is Jonathan Toews, in my opinion, probably one of the best captains to ever play the game. You know, thoughts on him coming back, Rupper? You know, this is you told a story about him a couple seasons ago on the podcast. It was last season, the season before, but you know, the importance he talked about, this is a fresh start for him and a fresh start for the organization as they get back into a playoff picture.
Yeah, for sure. Like, man, if you call Ryan Smith Captain Canada, what's Jonathan Toews? Like, what's, because he's better and he's, I mean, he's what, Captain Universe? I don't know. I'm just saying that team needs him. I literally think if I have to go down in the if you talk to, if we're doing this podcast in 30 more years, and we look back at the best leaders in the history of the NHL, this guy could beat Moose. Like, honestly, he could end up being the greatest leader.
Settle down here. Settle down, Rupper.
Yeah, let's back the wheels.
Let's settle down.
I don't know. I'm on the Jonathan Toews bandwagon there on that.
I think this guy's not real. Leader, but come on, yeah. Moose, come on.
No, I'm just saying, anyways, it's huge for Chicago. And, you know, just when you think that team is, you know, there was all the talk about, man, they'll never produce, they'll never do this. They have three guys signed at $10 million or whatever the heck it is. They just pick up Fleury. They just pick up Jones. And look how these guys could be playoff contenders again, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and they got McCabe on the back end too. So
yeah,
they got a lot of pieces that they were able to fill. Tyler Johnson from the Tampa Bay Lightning, he's there too. So
they quietly made moves, boys.
Yeah,
like nobody talked about it. Everybody was worried. What's Seattle doing? What's this? What's Vegas? All the Islanders signed Char. The Blackhawks are quietly making moves, man.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes there. Speaking of making moves, Peter Shirelli is back in the NHL with the St. Louis Blues as vice president of hockey operations, and Ken Hitchcock returns to St. Louis as a coaching consultant. Thoughts on that, Brody?
Well, I remember Shirelli, they were saying Bettman was trying to get him a job. Like, that's fucked, right? That's not normal behavior, that you've got to get somebody to help you get a job in the NHL, because like, why do they need him back? What was so good about him? I don't know. I don't like that happened. I like that Hitchcock is back. Just how smart people around, right? They all say the smartest people.
Well, he was here in Edmonton. Yeah, he was a coaching consultant with the Oilers the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's good. Bring smart people around. Listen to them. Take in what you want. Don't take in what you think. You like it, you like it. Just listen and learn, right? It makes you better as an organization, as a coach. You know what, Rupper and I coach little kids hockey, and Vandy does obviously too. Every drill, every awesome coach I've been around, every cool drill we do, they're called after people that they've stolen the drills from, right? They're not their own drills that they made up.
Yeah.
Like, we do lots of drills, and they're called after people's names, right? They saw a drill from Rupper, and I found one called the Vegas 7 Pass because we found it from the Vegas Golden Knights, right? You surround yourself with smart people. That's what they're doing. So bringing in Ken Hitchcock is
smart move.
Makes a lot of sense to me. It's a smart business move.
Yeah. And obviously there's a connection that Peter Shirelli and Doug Armstrong are really close friends. That Doug Armstrong's obviously the general manager of the St. Louis Blues. So, you know, so there's a bit of a personal connection there. So that's why
Did he get a draft pick for that, by the way?
No, because he was let go.
Oh, come on.
He was let go and his contract ran out. So
I was just kidding, boss.
Yeah, no, I know. Just a few more. Carey Price, Mike Hoffman failed their physicals in Montreal. Vandy, I think there was shock that Hoffman failed his, from what I read online.
Yeah, I think we knew Price was.
Price was gonna miss at least the start.
Hoffman, what's?
Yeah, knee injury for Price, and then Hoffman, I didn't see. One good sign is Jonathan Drouin's back on the ice after dealing with some personal stuff, so that's good to see there. Wishing him all the best. But how important it is going to be for Montreal. They don't have Shea Weber there, but, you know, if Carey Price, if this lingers into the season and they don't have Hoffman, too, who's a big goal scorer, the Habs are going to need him in a tough division, too.
Yeah, I was going to say another tough division, right? They're much like Pittsburgh. They're going to need those horses to get them going. I think teams are going to have to come out with a good start.
Yeah.
They're not going to you can't afford to come out flat. I mean, I can't think of a weak division right now. They're all pretty solid.
Yeah, the Pacific Division's the weakest out of the four, in my opinion, so.
Yeah, well, no, but either way, I mean, if you want to come in, the way it stands now, top two and then your wild card, you need to come out hard, and you need to come out with all your guns firing. And that's a big loss for, especially the Hoffman one.
Yeah.
I think we all knew Price probably.
We did, yeah, we knew, yeah.
But the Hoffman one is kind of.
Came out of left field from what I read too, so. All right, we'll finish up on the Evander Kane situation. The NHL, obviously, you know, they did their investigation for the gambling, you know, allegations that his estranged wife had claimed, and those are out of the picture now. That case is wrapped up. From what I read there, the wife didn't really cooperate, like help out in the investigation, and what they found, they couldn't find anything. But he unfortunately he's going to be investigated for another situation that's different to the one that he was first investigated for. But this is including his wife, though, as some tough things to read about with that, you know, with abusing his wife. And, you know, there's some kind of allegations there that about, you know, when he wanted to. You know, it's just tough. I don't even know what to say. It's just
here's what I don't understand. Why? How is this guy still in the league? What are a million players play hockey? Would you say? I don't know.
Yeah.
And how many guys are in the East Coast, the always hungry league? You know, that can, there are guys that can play the game as good as him, right?
Yeah.
Like, why are we still, if this is happening, there's obviously something,
a pattern.
There's a common denominator here. Like, just cut ties with the guy.
Yeah.
There's players that are saying, not just his estranged wife or whoever.
Yeah.
There's like players that have gone on record that said, man, this guy's doing this, this guy's doing that. And who did the NHL have running this investigation? Tweedledee and Tweedledum? Like, seriously, honestly.
Well,
when I say that, I'm not saying it to joke about it. Saying being honest. Like, is it because the NHL doesn't want to have a bad rap about something like this? You know,
well, they're getting into the gambling
stuff in the MLB. Right? No, I get it. Well, Hunter, yeah.
What you're saying ties into kind of the connection that they're getting in bed with the gambling part when you have a player allegations about gambling on his games, and when he's openly sits on ESPN a week ago talking about that he's gambled. You know, you have a legit argument to talk about that, Rupper. It's sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, no, it's
well, true. No, but okay. So Pete Rose plays baseball, right? Where he played baseball, allegedly gambled on games, his own sports team like that, banned for life. The guy's got 3,000 hits, probably one of the greatest catchers, if not the greatest catcher to ever play the game. But there was a scandal, the Black Sox scandal, right? That there'll never be allowed gambling in baseball again because of that whole fiasco. And that was the consequence. So what's the NHL doing here? Like, I don't get it. It makes no sense to me. It's not the first time he's been in trouble. It's not the first time, you know, his character's been questioned. It's not the first time he's went on social media and did something ridiculously dumb. So why does he get 17 strikes? I guess I don't understand that part.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously he's not in Sharks training camp. The one comment statement I didn't like is that the Sharks and Evander Kane agreed that he will not participate in Sharks in the 2001 Sharks training camp for further notice. In the way I was worded, I just didn't like that. Like, it was kind of, it shouldn't have been up to him. It kind of made it sound like it was up to him. But, you know, in all these investigations, you know, he goes on ESPN and persuades himself as a guy that's done pretty much nothing wrong. And and that's what I just, like, that's what I took away from it. I don't know what if anyone else of you guys saw it or what you guys thought of the interview on ESPN, but last week. But, you know, I thought
what
that
do you
was.
What think he was going to say?
No, I agree, but like once I saw that was being teased, I knew that was out there to make him look good, right? So, you know, Linda Cohen's like she's really good at what she does, who did the interview with him, but I just didn't think you know, he came out and said what he had to say and tried to make himself look good, but then he was even asked about going back into that Sharks locker room. And then Thomas Hertl at the media tour is like, well, I'm not going to comment with you guys with that. But I think before we make any comments, we got to talk about that as a team, you know, and Kevin Kurz, who does the Sharks, works for the Athletic and covers the Sharks really well. He had articles all summer that these players on this organization, the players didn't want him back in that locker room. So, you know, and there's a player I met over the summer here. And he said the same thing. He's like, just, it's nothing but problems. He would show up late. He would come in whenever he wanted. He wouldn't dress, you know, and eat with us. He kind of just did his own thing. He wasn't even following protocols and all that, because he was getting help. The organization was there and had a bit of a soft spot. The sad part is, I know that when you look at the player wise, he's a good player, and he, you know, the Sharks didn't have a great year last year, and he was their best player on the ice last year after everything he went through. But it's the bankruptcy, it's the stuff he's had there. And, you know, the thing is, you don't have a glowing list of players that say great things about him. And one of the memes out there is the Dustin Byfuglien meme, when they're walking in a Jets parking lot and Dustin Byfuglien's flipping him the bird, tell him to F off, you know, like that's one of the, and then everyone knows that situation of throwing his stuff into the shower and all that.
Listen, when he, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, was he not cut from the World Junior team?
And then he came on because there was an injury after, yeah.
But his,
he was originally cut, yeah. And then he came,
and then someone got hurt. I remember his interview. When, and I get it, 17 years old, you just got cut, but just his demeanor, I just remember thinking, fuck, you're cocky. And yeah. And just thinking like he, and I get it. That's I don't know. To me, these latest allegations, it's there's no negotiable. You're done. Yeah. Like, bye.
Yeah.
I don't care. We'll find three or four guys to replace you. Your yeah. goal total, your point total. Get lost. Yeah. Like, cut ties.
Yeah.
To me, that is unexcusable.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean,
there's obviously something going on for his wife to go on social media. Is it right? Nah, whatever. But,
But when you got, like Rupper said, when you got players, other
people have spoken yeah. publicly about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at the Winnipeg Jets. He basically got ran out of Winnipeg.
Yeah. Yeah, he sure did. So, anyway. And got ran out of Buffalo too. That was another organization he was in.
Goodbye. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So, finish on some good news here, and hopefully some good news. Eric Staal is trying to get back in the NHL. He's a UFA, lives in Minnesota during the offseason, but the Minnesota Wild doesn't show like they're going to have any interest in him. But he wants
to. They got no cap room after signing Krill.
Exactly. But he wants to play. He wants to play in the U.S., out east. There's a lot of that, a lot of options there. But, the Penguins got some injuries in the middle. Maybe he goes to the Penguins. They got Brian Boyle that they signed on a PTO. But maybe if the Crosby injury is going to be a bit longer, I don't know if there's a situation for Eric Staal to go there. But, do you guys think he has – I guess the first question is, do you guys think he has anything left in the tank, Brody? Went to the cup final with the Habs, right? So played pretty decent.
I would say regular season, but I would want him on my team in the playoffs as a fourth liner.
Yeah.
So I would say yes. Actually, I'd say yes. Give him minimum wage, 800 grand. I'd sign him up right now to be in the Oilers for 800 grand.
Yeah.
Whether he's up and down or he sits in the press box, game one of the playoffs, I'd want him in my lineup.
And Brody, Ruppert, do you think, because he's a veteran, 37 years old, he's been around, there's no rush to sign him, but maybe an injury down the road for a team in training camp or early in the season, that could change things for, his fortunes. But what's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'd take him. 37's the new 40, you know what I mean? That's what I heard anyways. No, I think he's still got something to give a team where it is. If he's demanding, well, I don't want to say he's demanding, but if he's saying that it needs to be, out east in US, at the end of the day, somebody's going to come, knock and you're going to go, right?
Yep. No, exactly. So, all right, we'll finish up on that. We appreciate everyone, taking the time to join in, and we we'll be back next week with another new episode. But as camp gets going here, things are wrapping up pretty good, so thanks for everyone for taking the time to join the Two Months podcast this week, and we hope everyone enjoyed the interviews that we had today. So thank you very much.
If it's done right the first time,
You don't have to redo it. If you get Pete's Concrete to pour your driveway, you don't need a repeat. When your patio is a PDO, you don't need a repeat. When Pete's Concrete fixes your sidewalk, all it takes is once. You don't need a repeat. And if your basement leaks, a Pete's Repair helps avoid a repeat. Get it done right the first time with the colors and textures you want so you don't have to redo it. For concrete, you can choose Pete's or repeats. Pete's Concrete.